Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is your host, Mark Whitby. I'm delighted to be joined today by Abigail Stevens. Abigail is the founder and managing director of Think Global Recruitment, which she set up 21 years ago. She herself has over 25 years international accountancy and finance recruitment experience. And for over two decades, she and her team have been assisting accountants to move across the globe, literally from any country to any country. Abigail, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
You know, when I first launched this podcast, you were at the top of my list of people I wanted to interview. You weren't quite ready to do it when I first approached you. I'm so glad that we're finally making this happen.
That's great.
Do you know that we started our businesses around the same time? I think, did you launch in 2000?
We did. We launched in 2000.
Awesome.
And I remember we used you quite early doors, didn't we?
Yeah. So I started my recruitment training business in 2001 and you were one of my first clients. So we've known each other for almost 20 years, which is just crazy.
Isn't it? Yes.
time flies when you're having fun. And for some reason, you're only my second guest based in Edinburgh. I also had Nick Price from Bright Purple. Do you know Nick?
Yes, I know Nick well. Lovely guy.
What a fantastic human being he is. And what was great is he agreed to come on the show, provided we only discussed his failures rather than his successes. So it was an interesting conversation. Abigail, could you tell me the story of your career from, you know, starting your own business at a very young age and how that all came about?
Absolutely. Great. Yeah, it's funny to say young age. I'm actually going to be 50 in 2 weeks' time. And it really does make you reflect back, because if I was just 28 when I started Think Global Recruitment.
Oh, that's awesome. Congratulations. That's fantastic.
Yeah, well, back then, little 28-year-old Abigail, I guess a lot of people said to me I was very brave setting up my own business at the time. I'd say I was probably more naive. I thought it was all going to be plain sailing and really easy to run your own business. But yeah, it's been a really interesting journey and very exciting. I guess if I rewound just a little bit to sort of what got me to that position, be quite interesting. I'd actually been in marketing prior to falling into recruitment, as everybody does. I'd been in marketing straight from school at the age of 16. I was working various PR jobs until I was about 20. And then I set up my first real business. When I say real business, I'd actually been running small businesses since about the age of six, which included selling sweeties at the end of the road, charging people for puppet shows.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
All sorts of stuff. You know, stationery at the back of the classroom. I was selling from some bankrupt stock from my dad's work, you know, anything like that I could do. So actually running my own business was quite natural when I was 20 and going in to run this off stationery business. I did that for about a year, but then I got these itchy feet. I had to go traveling around the world. So I went off around the world. And
hold on, Abigail, what was your first business when you were 20?
Oh, it's office stationery supplies.
Oh, stationery. So, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So like Theo Pafidis, you know, what was it, retail or what was the setup?
Both. Okay. Yeah, yeah. We had a shop. So we ran it from a shop, but we also did business to business. So delivered directly to lots of businesses. And that had been, you know, both avenues. Probably the business to business is more lucrative than, you know, obviously just selling in the shop front, but the shop front was more fun. I loved the customer interaction. So I did that, and it was successful. Great. A good little business.
I did not know that. That's cool.
Yeah, there you go.
So you decided to go traveling, which many young people do. And that obviously had a big impact on what you chose to do later on. Tell me about that chapter then.
Oh, it definitely did. Yeah. So I had this round the world ticket. I went through Thailand and through the Philippines and then got to Australia. Got to Australia and absolutely fell in love with the place. So I got sort of stuck there. I worked for the Australian Trade Commission and I was in marketing, working in their PR and marketing branding division. Did that for 3 years and adored it. But I think the whole traveling thing does give you confidence and make you a very different individual. I had to, the time came when it was time to leave Australia, and come back to the UK. I'd grown up in the south of England, but somehow all my friends in Australia were from Scotland, and there's no expat like a Scottish expat. They do nothing but talk about Scotland. So I thought I'd come up here and find out a bit more about bonnie Scotland. My sister had previously lived here, so I knew a little bit about it, but that was great. And I just fell in love with Edinburgh and never left. Came here for a couple of weeks, and that was 25 years ago. So
amazing. And so you had the international travel, you had the experience running your own business. How did the recruitment piece fall into place?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, my first when I first got to Edinburgh, I decided to temp for an agency I was looking for a permanent job. And that agency had me in at the marketing team of the Edinburgh Tourist Board. And then I got a phone call from them and they said, we think you'd be a very good recruitment consultant. So I'd said to them, what makes you say that? And they said, well, what is good about it? And why do you think that? And they said, well, you seem confident. I had actually, I'd missed out just before I went traveling. I did a 3-month piece helping Reebok in recruitment move from the north of England down to Stockley Park near London. And that was a temp job I'd done to get some money to travel with. So I'd had a taste. So I thought, yeah, this sounds good. And then I said to them, what do you like about recruitment? They said, it's like running your own business. And I said, oh, I know about that. And they said, yeah, you get given a budget, you run your own desk, you've got to track your clients, you track your candidates, and what you put in is what you get out. So the harder you work at it, the more commission you're going to get, the more rewards you're going to get, the more satisfaction from helping people. And I went, that sounds quite cool. So yeah, it was Caledonian Recruitment, which was had a 5% share owned by Pertemps when I joined them. So I got training from Pertemps, went down to their beautiful manor in England, and it was just a really good experience of learning and grounding. So yeah, and I did an accountancy and finance temp desk, which was really good grounding, because I think if you come in through the temp route, I've been perm ever since, but it gave me the speed, the sense of urgency, and I think you really need that even on a perm desk. So loved
amazing.
It.
So yep. And then I think you end up joining another international recruiting firm, didn't you?
I did. I got headhunted. You know, at that time, and I think it's still so, you get hundreds of companies approaching you and say, come and work for us. You're great. We're on all this. And I got a call from this agency, and it was the only one that really appealed to me. And I said, well, what are you offering? And they said, an international desk. You're going to be moving accountants across the globe. And I went, I've lived and worked overseas. I love that. And I'm passionate about it. And I did. I just found that, you know, I got so much from that overseas experience. I wanted others to have it. So getting involved with that was one of the best things ever. And I worked for them. I joined them initially. It was a quiet desk that hadn't been worked for a year or so. I was moving accountants across the globe. I also was supposed to do some local recruitment. In my first year, I placed about £200,000 worth of overseas placements and about £60,000 on the local desk.
Wow. And
back then, that was good. The average fees were about £6,000.
That's tremendous first year. That's incredible.
Yeah, not bad. So anyway, because I did that, I said to them, look, how about I bring someone else in to do the local desk? I'll manage them and I'll keep doing international. So we did that. And then it went from there, because every year the person on the local desk kept saying, can I join the international desk? And then we just added to the, moved them into international, got someone else trained up in the local, and it kept going from there until I had a team across Edinburgh and Glasgow.
Amazing.
Yeah. And it's all interesting because it all forms part of the story. And it was a great company to work for and I really loved it. They at the time, they were doing an assessment to see who would be good directors in the business. And I went through an assessment day along with some of the other managers, and they came back and said, oh, you'd be an amazing director. You're very entrepreneurial. You know how to do this. So, you know, you'll be great on the board of directors. So that made me think. And it's a shame for them, because what it did do is I'd sat there and went, okay, so I'm very good at being a director. I can run a business. I'm entrepreneurial. I should maybe do this on my own. And, you know, I knew at the time our desk was the most profitable in the company. And I felt like really passionate about the international recruitment and just wanted to go alone and run it as a specialist in international. So that was it. 2000, I left and started Think Global Recruitment.
Interesting. Wow. That's amazing. Abigail, do you know what? I think you personally are responsible for spawning an entire almost industry within international accounting recruitment in Scotland, and whole generations of recruiters who have, you know, come after you. I'm sure that you were a big impetus on that. There must be, dozens of international recruitment consultants now who might not have been in that sector had you not pioneered it kind of all those years ago.
I think you're probably right. Yes, it seems to be, the evidence shows that. And it's one of the things I'm most proud of, actually, is the people that I've trained and brought through over the years, and what I've been able to, give to the industry in that way. It's been absolutely great.
Abigail, could you talk, 20 years, we can't do justice to your, everything you've learned and so on in that time frame. But what's really interesting about your story is that you were a top biller and a manager at another firm. You set up on your own. You actually built a really large firm, and then you contracted down to a small firm again, and now you're growing again, but in a different business model. Could you speak to that a little bit in terms of talking me through those key inflection points, why you made the decisions that you did along the way?
Absolutely. Yeah, no problem at all. So, the first office we had was in Edinburgh. That's where I lived, and it made a lot of sense. And I always had a vision that I'd have a Glasgow office as well, I guess because I'd had a team across Edinburgh and Glasgow previously. So the Glasgow office started within the first year. Then we got approached by two Hays consultants. Hays had a small division doing some international recruitment, and the two that were in that division asked if they could set up our office for us in London. So we said, yeah, that sounds a really good idea. Let's go for it. And we set up London. Then one of our consultants who worked for us in Edinburgh from almost day one, she'd started as a temp and an admin and then become a recruitment consultant and a manager. She said she was returning to New Zealand. And so we said, well, we could do an office on that side of the world. So hence New Zealand was born. Having lived in Australia for 3 years myself, I really felt that we needed an office in Australia as well, if we're going to have one on that side of the world. So we persuaded one of the managers who'd been in London, who used to live in Australia, to go back and set it up. So I spent several years living between 2 months there, 2 months here, 2 months there, 2 months here. Wow. And then when I'm here, I'm going around the three offices. When I'm there, I'm going around the two offices. I actually loved it. It was really good, but it was nice just to keep, I wanted to go and see the offices and be able to keep that personality, the ethics we have in the business, the culture, et cetera, all going through in the service levels.
That's one of the challenges is with international offices or even just multiple branches is maintaining your culture and your way of doing things and the cohesion there and that making sure you don't lose that.
It is. It's a huge thing, just making sure that happens. And we were lucky that all of our office had been born out of, almost from the Edinburgh office, the people or the existing offices. So they had already been homeschooled through us, I guess. And that was something that I felt was quite good.
Definitely. No, that makes sense.
Yeah, it did make a lot of sense. Yeah. And it worked well. Yeah. And God, we have glory years. Those first few years, we went up and up. We were making lots of profit. We were storming and it was great. It was absolutely awesome. We'd maybe overspent. We stretched ourselves. We put our office in London in Mayfair.
Wow. Okay.
Some of it. But the thought path was we wanted to attract the best consultants on the market. So we wanted to give them a nice, interesting, sexy place to work. We wanted to, our clients, when they were visiting, we took them to breakfast at the Ritz and we did things like that. Or, we made it really good fun for them. And we also, and then in Sydney, we were in an A-listed building and, beautiful views and everything. And those two locations also carry very high salaries.
Yes.
And I think we probably stretched a bit thin there. But they were still exciting times. Yeah. We started Accountancy Worldwide International Recruitment Conference. And we ran that. We organized about 10 of those across. We'd run them in England, in South Africa, and in Australia. So we'd had various different ones, and we'd get between 100 and 300 delegates coming. We would get the biggest number of companies, I think it was about 20 companies, came from all over the world and presented and exhibited and interviewed candidates at these events. So that was really exciting. It just kept our name on the map.
Abigail, could you speak a little more on that? Because this was a genius idea. I've always thought that was, and I don't know any other company that did it, at least not as successfully as you did. How did that actually work? So you host the conference, you make sure you've got lots of delegates along who are sort of candidates, and then you invite clients to basically pitch their business, and then you run interviews at those events. Is that the?
Yeah, absolutely. It was very labor intensive, but it was great. The clients all paid to attend as well to have their space. They would fight for spaces. Because we'd say the earlier years we said we'd only have one company representing one type of industry sector for each country.
Okay.
We did actually expend on that at one point, and we had about all of the big four from Australia and New Zealand came at one year. We'd have all these different companies there, and then they would interview the day. You had to run the schedule. We had all the staff, you know, everyone was there to man it and to run it and to make sure. We had a big interview table desk where you had to make sure no one clashed their interviews, and we had to prep all the candidates before the event. It was just it was so much went into it.
Like insane, but really exciting at the same time.
Yeah.
So you had PwC, Deloitte, KPMG, EY, Grant Thornton, you know, they would all come along, all and they companies. Paid to come.
Yeah.
But then presumably you also got a placement fee as well. Yeah. Okay.
They did indeed. Yeah, they did. I mean, we were still very much pioneers and almost the only ones doing international recruitment at the time. Okay. So it just made sense for them to come and get these candidates. And in fairness, you know, it works so well. A lot of them are still these days. We're looking at potentially resurrecting this as a virtual conference now.
But, oh, cool.
Because these companies are struggling a little bit to get the people on board. And it just gives them a one-stop shop because they need a lot of people every year.
Yes.
So
amazing.
And getting the right people.
So in terms of organizing that, did you have a full-time event person or?
At our height, when we were at our largest, we actually had 2.5 people in marketing.
Okay.
And they would help run the event, all the marketing side of it, making sure the promotion materials were going out. And then all the consultants, it's down to them, persuade their candidates to come along as well, or chat up the clients and get the clients to come. There's all sorts of things going on with it. It was phenomenal and it was fun. It was really hard work, but it's so exciting. And to meet the clients and candidates and have all that face-to-face contact, it was
absolutely
quite an intense rush.
I guess that's the potential downside of running an international business is that, you know, and this is before Zoom and, you know, all that, right? So you're mainly working on the phone and you miss that face-to-face contact. So you just found a different way of creating that connection that intimacy.
Yes. Yeah. It was always boom or bust with the client facing, because you're either going on a visit to Bermuda, beating 10 clients in one go, or you're just not seeing them at all. It's all phone work. So until, of course, as you said, until 2020, where life has got amazing.
That's right.
Yeah. Very exciting.
So at your peak in terms of size, what was the size of the business?
So we had 59 staff,
okay.
And that was across four offices at the time. We'd merged New Zealand into Australia, actually, because in New Zealand, we'd end up in Wellington, and it was really hard to find consultants in Wellington. We were in the wrong city, probably, and we just felt we could run it all from Australia. We had plans to open in Hong Kong and continue growing. Mm. And then end of 2007, 2008 hit, financial services recession.
I remember it well. That was not fun at all. Before we talk about that, though, like looking back over your meteoric growth and opening offices in Mayfair and, you know, in Sydney and having like really flash offices and stuff, would you have still done it that way, or is there anything you would do differently?
Yeah, I think we probably would have looked at the overheads a little bit better on those offices, definitely, and just sort of brought them in a little bit lower. I mean, they honestly did seem to attract good consultants, but they maybe could have been elsewhere, those offices, in a bit of a cheaper premises. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. You might remember back in episode 43, I talked to Plamen Ivanov, the executive chairman of iIntro. If you missed it, it's well worth going back into the archives and having a listen. One of the things we talked about was a way for recruiters to shift the conversation with prospects away from fees and make it all about value. iIntro has created a tool called the Bad Hire Calculator that you can show to your prospects that proves to them that your recruitment service will save them potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars. When you can do that, the exact fees you charge almost become immaterial because you've proved that you will save the client the most money in the long run. If you'd like to add this tool to your arsenal, you'd be pleased to know that I've partnered with iIntro and they're offering a 25% discount to listeners of the Resilient Recruiter podcast. All you have to do to claim this discount is book a free consultation and mention my name or this podcast. Just go to recruitmentcoach.com/retained, follow the instructions, and iIntro will take care of the rest. That's recruitmentcoach.com/retained. So then what happened during the recession?
So recession hit. By this point, we also had two non-exec directors, and we had a board meeting and decided that we would close the remote offices. You know, as I'd mentioned, London and Sydney have been costing quite a lot of money to run, and Edinburgh was still very successful, making profit. Glasgow was doing okay. And we merged Glasgow. We had consultation talks with everyone, and we offered for them to merge in with the Edinburgh office, which in fact every single member of staff in Glasgow asked to commute through and work. Some of them working part time from home and part in the office, and we managed to do that. The whole operation of actually closing the other offices and making redundancies was absolutely had to be done by clockwork, because we didn't want, we were across two different time zones. And we obviously didn't want one time zone then telling the others, giving them the heads up and giving them a worry before we could talk to them properly.
Yes.
And that was really tough. And I couldn't be in every place at once. I recorded a video to tell everyone. Then we had my senior people in every office ready to deliver it and talk through it. Mm-hmm. When I did this video, I was sitting in Australia and my co-director Cramen was over here. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, I'm really struggling. I keep crying. And he said, well, let me look at it. And he said, keep it. He said, you know, the staff need to see how you feel. I'm welling up now thinking about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one of those moments when you're just like, oh God, I can't believe I'm doing this, you know. So we ended up with a lot of good leavers. A lot of people were very positive about the experience, I think. And hopefully everybody realized why it had to be done.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Wow. That's the tough part. The not fun part of running a business, right?
Absolutely. Something that 28-year-old Abigail hadn't envisaged.
Right. Absolutely. Tough. So you came through that really tough period. And then what was the sort of emerging out of the recession then? What was the shape of the business then?
So we came out with about 20 plus people in Edinburgh office, we maintained that actually until just a few years ago. It got better because post-recession we were learning. You know, we'd had the dot-com recession when I first started the business, quite interestingly, but we got through that when it wasn't as effective as financial services, which affects the accountancy and finance sector.
Yes.
But yeah, so coming out, we started to learn that actually that after a recession, there's a big shortage of candidates.
Right.
So we then had some other really good years a few years after, and that started going okay. But we did lose some really good people within our business, and that will be, you know, maybe one of those regrets that I'll have for a long, long time. You lose systems and processes that are in people's heads. And you do lose a bit of that loyalty and that, wow, we're all on fire and we're just going forward, forward, forward. So it does make a big difference to your business, a big difference.
Definitely.
I would think twice about it again.
Abigail, obviously, this is one of those things that's not in your control. You have some influence, but you can't ultimately, people do what they're going to do, right? And looking back, is there anything that you would have done differently that you think might have maybe not saved all of them, but you might have retained a few of those key people?
Yeah, I think there is. We were about to launch two new divisions when it happened. One was doing legal recruitment,
okay.
But one was also temp and contractors.
Okay.
The legal recruitment would have been a disaster because that took even bigger hit than we did in the recession.
Right.
But temp and contractors would have probably saved us a bit.
Right.
Because I think in recessions again, people then say, well, we've got to look at our P&L. We can't hire people, permanent staff, but we can bring some contractors in.
Yes.
To help keep the work going through. And that probably would have been the one thing that would have helped us at that point.
Right. Okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense. And then, okay, so any other pearls of wisdom in terms of staff retention? Because this is, the recruiting industry notoriously has, a challenge with retention. Why do you think that is? And what do you think owners can do to counteract that?
I think it's a tough one. I mean, in 2016, we won the REC Award for, Recruitment Agency of the Year for staff and the way we looked after staff and, sort of saying that we were one of the best employer, that's what it was.
Amazing.
And but we still would have turnover,
Yes.
And I think you can do an awful lot for people, but it just depends. And one of the things for me was it's very hard when you're bringing rookies in. That's where the turnover often happens because a lot of trainees don't know if they like recruitment or not.
Sure.
They're new to it. It's a starting point. And they might decide after a year or so that this isn't for them. And then you get that turnover. And I guess that sort of brings us forward some ways to what our decision was in our new growth plan. So we're mainly getting people in, mainly, but not all, that are experienced consultants, because we knew at least we've ticked the box that they like recruitment. So
true,
that
yep.
really helps. Yeah. I think, staff need to feel successful. They need to celebrate successes. You've got to reward them and make sure they know that they're being successful. And offering training and development is a big thing. If they know they're going to get lots of training with you and they're learning all the time from you, then I think that's going to be good. And moving with the times. So I our new model, do you want me to talk about that now? Should I give a little bit
about
that?
Okay, so just before we go into that, we had the latest pandemic. What impact, because you guys were moving people from one country to the next, so that obviously was off the table. So how did you weather the storm?
We flexed a bit. We actually, it was quite interesting, because I think it was March when 2020 and the REC were coming up for a meeting in Edinburgh. And a couple of days before, I sent them a message and said, should we add to the agenda something about this COVID thing that's happening? They said at the time, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. By the time it got to the day of the meeting, on the day of the meeting, they told us that LinkedIn were going to be coming over for it, but LinkedIn had banned all their staff from flying because of this COVID thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just went, oh my God, this is it. This is going to be, we can't fly. People can't fly. People aren't going to be moving. That's what we do for a living, is move people across the globe. So I actually called off that meeting, and my co-director and I had a SWOT meeting, and we did an analysis, and which we've done before when we get to these moments, Brexit, this one. And we just said, okay, how's this going to work for us? And we had to look for where we could and what we could do. And some of that was, we flexed a bit, and we've actually found a bit of a niche where we were finding people who were new in the country or had recently been in the country or needed a visa transfer. So we were still placing people from overseas, but they were already in the country into jobs.
Excellent. All right.
Yes. So we had an international flavour to it, but it wasn't as international as it had been.
Yes.
We did try and we still do sort of encouraging companies to think about the remote working model as well. And some companies were taking people on board and saying, okay, well, they can start remotely, and then as soon as they can fly, they can come here. We had starters that actually did fly during all of this. They had to fly into a quarantine hotel wherever they were going, or go directly into quarantine in various countries around the world. And some of their stories are brilliant. They never actually got to meet their new colleagues for a year.
Wow.
It was just like, so other than on the course, this wonderful evolution of Teams and Zoom, which has changed our lives. But yeah, so we managed, we got through it. And we didn't only get through it, we did decide that halfway through it that we were going to expand.
Wow, good. That's a bold choice. Tell me your thought process there.
Okay, so our thought process was that we knew from the previous recessions we'd been through that after a recession, that usually there's a shortage of people.
Yes.
And so we knew that there was going to be a high demand for our candidates at the end of all of this. We also started to see the furlough schemes kicking in, a lot of recruitment consultants available on the market. And we thought, let's snap them up now. Let's just get through this. We can use any assistance we can and the grants that the government were giving and just help us. And instead of putting people on furlough, we were bringing people in that had been on furlough in other companies and employing them.
Amazing.
Yeah, and we could get experienced consultants. We also realized that people had had that experience now of working from home and that we could offer them a home situation, which meant that I didn't have to just look for recruitment consultants in Edinburgh. I could look across the whole globe and find the best people in the world to work for us instead of the best people on our doorstep.
That is amazing, Abigail. That's like, looking back, it's obvious, right? But at the time, that was a brave move when everyone else is like, you know, battening down the hatches, making people redundant, putting people on furlough, trying to like, and you're, I interviewed James Cann, whose famous expression is observe the masses and do the opposite. And that's exactly what you guys did. You took, you turned that to your advantage. That's so cool. So tell me more about this new business model and how it's working for you.
Sure. Well, basically we'd been hearing from clients that they weren't seeing any lack of any loss in productivity. And in fact, in some scenarios, increase in productivity from their teams and their staff. Mm-hmm. We were feeling it ourselves. I was loving it because of obviously during lockdown, the one thing you could do is go for long walks. So I could just, whatever, you know, wrap my work around my walks and go out and do these walks and do whatever exercise I wanted to do, go to the gym, and then work the hours I wanted. We also got that wonderful thing called Calendly and all these different Calendly diary things. So that became absolutely awesome because if I could block out in my calendar the things that the times I want to do personal stuff, but then let candidates have other hours to the day that maybe before it'd been harder to sort of work out where are we going to do this, but they could choose. And when you're dealing with the whole world anyway, we've got different time zones. Yep. So yeah, we could flex around that. And how it's worked out, well, we advertised. The advert we did in June 2020, I got about 200 responses to it.
Wow, incredible.
Unbelievable. Experienced consultants. And I interviewed about 60-odd. And selected some of the really best. I've done the same advert this year and I'm not getting nearly the same response.
Yeah, now everyone's hiring again.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
So where did you advertise in June?
Okay, so in June, we looked quite a lot at South Africa for a starter and the UK.
Yeah.
And then we just sort of put things out randomly. What I ended up with now, well, what we've got now is we've got consultants in South Africa, mm-hmm. in Canada, mm-hmm. In Europe and in Scotland, England and Ireland. And in fact, we did start somebody over in the Philippines, but she's on leave at the moment. So it's been really sort of very interesting. We'd already previously outsourced some of our admin to India anyway. Yeah. So we've got all this going on. The thing also is the individuals we've hired. So we've got a couple of mothers, in fact, three now, who obviously want to spend time with their children and they've got to, spend the time with taking them to nurseries or whatever. We've got a father that does school drops. We've got professional sportsman, rugby player, touch rugby.
Interesting.
And he has training schedules to work around. And then we've got somebody as a traveler. So he spent a lot of lockdown in Colombia. And he decided if he's going to be locked in somewhere, it's going to be in the sun.
Yeah.
and he was Canadian, so he ran from the Canadian winter into summer into Colombia, and then he went back to Canada, and he's now in Spain. So
amazing.
It's great. It's just lovely, and I'm loving the fact that we're enabling people's lives to have that real. Just not everyone talks about work-life balance, but they really do have it now.
That is brilliant because you've reimagined what this job can be and, you know, the taking the best things about recruitment, but then also removing some of the constraints and barriers to, you know, expanding and managing people and, you know, also without the same overheads that you had before in terms of like infrastructure, office rent, and all that stuff. It's genius. Absolutely. And I mean, it's really very scalable.
It is. It works really well. I think one of the keys is to still make sure people feel like they're part of a team.
Yes.
And we have our business meeting on the Monday morning.
Yeah.
We sandwich that at the end of the week with a wrap-up meeting.
Yeah.
So everyone's online together. And then we have one-to-ones during the week. But then you have Microsoft Teams where, you know, all of us can see each other's diaries. You could go, they're free. I'm going to call them. Everyone's got a buddy when they join, and as well as their manager. So, and everyone, there's a really great team banter. It actually feels the same as it ever was in an office. We all still joke and laugh when we're on the meetings, and it's almost because you can see each other and, yeah. and stuff. It's going to be really strange when we meet for the first time in person.
For sure. So is that planned or?
We're certainly hoping to. Yeah. We're going to be setting goals for sometime next year to, you know, if we hit these goals, then we'll have an international meetup somewhere. And we'll choose somewhere decent and then we'll go along and meet up. So
that's fun.
The plan.
I hired my right-hand person, Leanne, during lockdown, and we met finally for the first time a few months ago, a year after we'd, you know, so we've been working together for a year and we'd never actually met. It was quite a surreal experience when we've actually were in the flesh, you know. I think you'll have a lot of fun when that happens. So I have a question for you. So regarding hiring rookies versus experience, this is always the sort of dichotomy, isn't it? Of, you know, there's pros and cons to each. And you've gone for the folks who have experience. What is your, now, in terms of managing people remotely, I think that does make sense because rookies, I think, would benefit from that incubation of being, you know, in a physical environment where they're absorbing the culture as well as, you know, learning by osmosis, by hearing people's calls and that sort of thing. That makes sense given your business model. But why is your preference to hire experienced folks these days?
I'd say it that's a huge part of it, definitely, because it's remote. We can't necessarily give them the chance to absorb. We have actually had someone who's come in as a resourcer who's more of a rookie, you know, will train as a consultant, and they get to shadow. So you can provide shadowing of all the different meetings, all the parts of the process, but you're right, they're not seeing that whole thing going on, a whole day of what someone does in a recruitment consultant world and all of that. The other part was I give my all to somebody new joining us. We do a lot of training induction. We do a lot of hand-holding, getting people in the right place. And with a rookie, they do tend to, you know, they don't always stay, as I said earlier on. And I guess each time I lose somebody, a little bit of my heart goes with that. And it's like, okay, you know, now they're moving and we've done all this with them. And you get resilient about that over the years. But at the same time, it's like, wow, this could give me the chance to get people who are going to be long-term stayers that really see they've tried other companies. And this is one thing a lot of people will always tell us that, you know, we gave them so much help. We give them support. We get the right tools set up for people. But you don't know that. If it's your first company, you don't know that's better than the next company until you've tried it. And I guess it's sort of, I'm employing people that have already tried other companies and then they come to us and realize how good we are.
All right. That's awesome. How do you assess people though? Because I think the risk of taking a recruitment consultant who's experienced is, well, why are they leaving in the first place if they're doing really well? And then you want those top performers rather than the kind of people who, because there is a lot of recruitment consultants who are on a merry-go-round who spend a year here, then they go to another place for a couple of years, then 6 months here. And there's just loads of people making those rounds. So how do you ensure that the people you're bringing on board are A, compatible with your culture and the way you want, you know, and your values and everything, and B, are going to be the ones who perform?
A really good question. And it's interesting. Well, that whole merry-go-round thing's always a warning bell. You really need to go fine-tooth comb as to why anyone's done that or avoid it if you can. Gut instinct's very good. But we always did personality profiling until probably the first lot of recent hires in 2020, and we decided to take a gamble with them and not personality profile them, mm-hmm. and made a couple mistakes. Mm-hmm. So we're back to paying for personality profiles again. I find them really, really useful. And they're not a cheap thing to do, but they're worth every penny, because a bad hire a hire that doesn't work out is not good for anybody.
True.
We're checking people out through the personality route now, and it's great. It makes a difference.
Do you mind sharing the tool that you guys use?
Yeah, we use Thomas.
Yeah.
I tried a few others again, and there's a few kicking around the market, and each time I come back to Thomas, because I really like the way that they lay out the profile results and, mm-hmm. and understand. I did all their training years ago as well, so I guess that helps in some ways, but they will give you lots of detail. They're actually good. As we get bigger, we'll go back to using them properly on a retained basis. So then we can also use it as a management tool with our existing team.
Excellent.
So you can see how to manage people and get the most from them, and what motivates them and all of that. And that's another great thing about doing the personality profiling before bringing them on. You will get that information to help you in their journey and help them in their journey.
Fantastic. So that you've got the Thompson personality profile. What are the other keys to your selection process so that you feel confident when you're making that offer that, you know, of course, there's always an element of risk because human beings, you know, right? So, but you feel confident making an offer that, yes, we found a Think Global person.
A lot of competency interviewing.
Yeah.
So we use, we know the competencies that we're looking for, and we will ask questions around those. We dig into the CVs, and we do a lot of digging around, you know, what targets and goals have you worked to in the past, mm-hmm. and how did you do against these? And I'm also NLP master practitioner.
Oh, wow. That's so cool. I didn't think I knew that. Oh, that's awesome.
Don't tell everyone, because I can read eye patterns.
That's cool.
So and it's amazing. Actually, that really does help in recruitment. You really can delve better into people and understand them better when you've got that.
Oh, absolutely. That's a really valuable toolkit that you can draw upon. When did you do your NLP training?
About 5 years ago.
Okay, so that's why I didn't know.
Still keep on top of it. So
yeah. Oh, that's cool.
My trainers they were brilliant during lockdown. They started every Tuesday a free 1 hour session with everyone that's worked with them before.
Oh, that's cool.
So, and they've maintained it. It's still going. It's awesome.
Do you mind sharing who you recommend for NLP training?
Sure. I'll recommend two different companies. Toby and Kate are the two that Toby and Kate McCartney. Yep. They're the two that I went all the way through to masters with. They're a lovely couple, very dynamic. Toby's also started a really good sustainable business recently. He creates roads from plastics.
Oh, cool.
So waste plastics, which is absolutely amazing. And that's taken off across the globe. I find them both very inspirational. I've also worked with a lovely lady called Madeline Allen. Mm-hmm. And all of these people are based in Scotland, although Toby and Kate run most of the training in London, mm-hmm. And in Turkey, which is nice.
Okay, cool.
And Madeline Allen, she's also very good. She's good for business training. She'll come in and she's taken our team sometimes through some of the team building days and things like that.
Awesome.
She's a lovely lady.
My mum and dad are both NLP master practitioners.
Ah.
And I've never done the train. Like, I've read books by Bandler and Grinder. And I kind of was immersed in it growing up, but I don't know. There's like what your parents do. There's a certain element of resistance to but I would like to do it eventually. So this is cool.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. No, I recommend that to anyone. Yeah. And my first taste of NLP was right the way back to those Pertemps days when I had the training down at the Manor in England, in Tim Watts's Manor, I think it was. And they gave us a little bit of NLP there.
Oh, wow.
And
they were ahead of their time.
I remembered that for years and years and years. Yeah. Then I saw these courses coming up. Most of the NLP trainers will let you do a free first session to get a taster of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next bit you pay, but then you get that chunked off. If you go forward, each time you go forward, you take off the bit you've already paid till you get to your full qual.
Oh, that's cool. My dad did his NLP training in the 80s in Santa Cruz, California, which was like really, I'm from a small town called Halifax in Nova Scotia. And well, it's a city, but it's a small city. And to go, like, this was just so weird. Like, he went to California and got this weird training, and he would try and explain to people. And at the time, like, it was just, I don't know, like, people thought it was really quite, you know, hippie sort of like woo-woo stuff, right? And now I think it's more and more mainstream, but that's cool. So, yeah. So what's next for Think Global Recruitment?
Okay, so we're growing. We're continuing to look for good consultants. We've got a plan to hopefully double in size in the next 2 years. You know, we've also giving our consultants now specialisms in each area of the accounting finance industry sector. That's working really well. And I mentioned we might bring back the virtual conference as well, which will be good. Hopefully more international gatherings of the team and lots of exciting things. We've actually got a team business planning day on Monday.
Great.
So yeah, it should have happened a couple of times, but I don't know if you heard about South Africa have this thing called load shedding, and no. So they get power cuts at certain times of the day every day when the government decree it, and so we've had a couple of moves, but we're getting there, and it's all going to happen next week.
Well, I'm excited, and you're always someone who, you know, you're so energetic, and I absorb that energy from you, Abigail. So thank you for bringing that energy to the Resilient Recruiter podcast, and let's keep in touch. I'll look forward to hearing the next chapter.
Brilliant, Mark. And thank you for all your support through those 20 years we've known each other.